Stay Sane with Jane, Season 2, Local Legends, the show that helps you to thrive, not just survive, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Tune in each week as Jane connects with local legends of Dorset, bringing you the most up-to-date health and wellness guidance, therapies, courses, retreats, and stories happening locally. Each session includes a guided meditation hosted by Jane or one of her special guests. Here's your host, Jane Scanlon. Hello and welcome to Season 2 and Episode 12. Today we are talking to Chris Dix, and we're going to be diving into your how to achieve your desired level of health and fitness in this crazy fast and overstimulated world. Now, Chris is originally from Essex. He's been a PT, that's a personal trainer, for 10 years, but he previously worked in the corporate world of finance, recruitment, and travel and sales. He is now a Southbourne person like myself, and he has also traveled extensively abroad, backpacking the world twice, which is amazing. I've done it once and absolutely loved it. Hello, welcome, Chris.
Hello, welcome. Thank you very much for having me on your podcast. I appreciate it. Also, I like the fact that you started with local legend. It's always nice to be called a legend very early on.
Yes, definitely. Well, you've been working your business locally for a long time now, haven't you?
Yeah, just over 10 years now. I mean, I moved to Dorset. I moved to Southbourne about 13 years ago. So wow. 13, 14 years ago. But I've been self-employed and running a business here for just over 10.
Awesome. Amazing. So let's hear a little bit more about you, the man behind the business.
Okay. I think most people start off. I'm 56. As you said earlier, I'm originally from Essex, where most of my childhood was experienced. I've worked predominantly, very similar to a lot of my clients, I have worked in corporate and in offices for a very large part of my career. Which has probably led me to where I am, in a sense. A couple of things in my past that have sort of led me down to where I probably am now in terms of the business I run. So I moved from, I left Essex after about 20, I think I was 24 to 26. I got married and my wife was less inclined to live in Essex. She wanted to live in Kent, where her family were from.
Yeah.
So we were living in Kent. And then got the opportunity to travel the world backpacking for a while, which we did, which was fantastic. Loved the experience. And I think then It was subsequent to that that I sort of dropped out of the corporate world and then sort of started to do some smaller company work, still at relatively senior levels. And then we went traveling again for a shorter period this time. And then it was a case of, well, that sort of, I think, sort of stoked the fire of wanting to move to the coast. Mm. And so we moved down to the coast, say, 12, 13 plus years ago. And to be honest, haven't really wanted to move since. Love the area. I don't think it's always like trying to find the best of everything. And I think sort of with Bournemouth in particular, you've got everything on your doorstep that you could possibly get. Outside of having mountains, I suppose, on the doorstep.
I know, I totally agree, because we've got the gorgeous New Forest behind us for our green and forest bathing, and we've got our gorgeous beach.
I think that's the thing. It's like you've got the best of both worlds, and there's, well, when we arrived, there was plenty of work available before I set up my own business. So I suppose I've always been athletic in sort of, as from a child, I always was within sort of fairly high standard of football and athletics. So I always loved the exercise part of things, but found myself that when I entered the corporate world and especially into offices, especially working in the city, that basically just got pushed to one side.
Or people use it as a real a stress reliever, but then everything is intense, right? Yeah. Have you ever found that? Yeah, the workouts are intense.
I think so.
The admin or whatever, the corporate world is all intense. So it's just that high level of...
Yeah, well, you're working long hours. I was in an entertaining role as well. So I was sort of corporate banking. So I spent a lot of time entertaining clients, which on the face of it sounds like it's really good fun. And I always used to have this... sort of joke with my wife, who would always be sort of saying it can't be that bad going to sporting events and all these types of things. And you sort of say, well, yeah, that there is an element of it, but it's work at the end of the day. I'm having to entertain. It's not just, I'm not there with my friends, I'm there with clients, and therefore it's a different dynamic. But that's what led me on to then basically putting on a lot of weight and not looking after myself and smoking quite heavily and all this sort of thing. And I think I got to the point, and for part of what I do now, that is the background that I bring to the type of client I work with on one side of my personal training business, is that. So in a sense, I've been down the route of both types of clients that I deal with. And so that's where I am now as a person. So it's a case of I'm sort of really helping myself as I was back then, but with people nowadays who are in a very similar position to what I was.
Yeah. Yes. And I want to backtrack quickly and ask you, what were your favorite or most adventurous places in the world that you've been to?
I think Japan, because this was back in, this was 25 years ago. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, this is over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Things have changed, obviously, mighty since then. But Japan, I think we went there as we'd been to all of the obvious places that most people do. You go to Southeast Asia and you go to Australasia, and it's very easy to get around. It's very easy to get by because there's no expectation of English. Or foreign language needing to be required. And I think also that culturally there's a lot of similarities. Even when you go to Indonesia, it's relatively straightforward, Thailand, Malaysia, to fit in. But in Japan, it's a completely different world. It's you know, culturally it's alien, and English is almost unspoken, certainly when we went, and it was incredibly difficult to get by. So I think Japan, just for its just pure cultural sort of in the face, you turn up thinking one thing and you leave thinking, I'd go back, but wow, would I do it differently?
Yeah. Oh, amazing. That's actually on our list for maybe next summer or the summer after with the kids. They're desperate to go over there. Obviously, Pokemon and all of that, all from Japan, is massive for children, and they're fairly obsessed with Japan and sushi and all things like that. I suspect it's changed a lot since 25 years ago.
I would guess, although I do believe that culturally they are still very reluctant to change a lot, so it may not be quite liberal or Western, I suppose, as we would expect.
Is good. It's quite, I think it's good, because we're really going to see a different culture. And that's what I love. Like when I went to West Africa, that was probably my highlight, traveling around there for 2 months and really just diving into a completely different world. Yeah. Loved it. Yeah. So after all your wonderful traveling, how did you actually get started in the personal training world, in the fitness world?
Yeah, I think, as I alluded to earlier, I think really what happened was I had been very athletic as a sort of youngster and a teenager. And then I'd also worked in corporate and had experienced what happens when you get stressed, busy, entertaining, long hours, long commuting. And stepping out of that to go traveling basically sort of completely took me out of that, and in a sense, certainly on the sort of long hours and commuting side, it sort of opened your eyes a little bit to sort of like calming down and slowing things down a little bit. And so when I came down here, I took a job in finance just because it was relatively straightforward and because we just moved 1 week and we were down here the next, sort of thing.
Easy transition.
Yeah, and then over time, I decided that I wanted to do personal training principally for me, because I wanted to understand how I could, as I got older, how I could maintain fitness and health. But I really enjoyed the course when I did it. It was a sort of a 6 week, which is nothing really when it comes down to it, but a 6 week course locally. Mm-hmm. And the lady that was one of the main trainers there had sort of said to me, had asked me why I was doing it, and I sort of said that I was doing it for myself. And she said, look, because of your background, because you're used to entertaining people, you're used to dealing with clients, she said, if I ran a gym, I'd hire you tomorrow, sort of thing, because you would have that, yeah, sort of, you're ready to go, basically. And I thought, well, maybe I should sort of think about doing this for a job, basically, for a career. Mm. And within about 3 or 4 weeks of finishing the course, I had a client, and I was like, okay, so this is a little easier than I thought, but you sort of have the same client. And then it just snowballed from there. I think within like 2 months, I dropped my full-time job and I was self-employed full-time, because it just snowballed from there. Once one client, two, three, and then off you go. So I sort of got into it because I think I knew I could help people that had been down the route that I'd been, and that were struggling with regards to time and juggling different priorities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what led me into wanting to do it outside of helping myself first.
Yeah, that's lovely. A really beautiful journey. And it's interesting how, you know, having that space away, traveling, it allows you to actually think and tune into what you really want inside, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that was certainly a massive part of traveling, what happens apart from just the all of the other aspects of traveling, of actually going to places, seeing different cultures, learning about, you know, how other people live, basically, and what things you have in common and what things are different. But I think having the time away just gives you a chance to decompress and just go, do you know what? What's really important here? And then that gives you, and if you're brave enough, you can come back and change that. I think the difficulty comes is that it's brave to go traveling, certainly later on. It's relatively straightforward when you leave uni, shall we say, or you when you're sort of in your late teens, early 20s, because you haven't really embarked on anything. But if you've already had 10 to 15 years of employment and then to step out, or even longer, so you're brave enough to then sort of drop out. And then I think when you come back, it's, well, this is a clean slate. This is an opportunity to do something different if I choose to. And I think you have plenty of time to think and plenty of time to see what's going on around the world. And you either make a decision to just step back into the reality and life that you had already, or you decide to slightly step outside of that. I think I remember very much so the first time coming back, and we'd been away for about 8 months at that point. And we came back and we got back talking to people that we, you know, friends, family, and it was almost like nothing had changed. It was just like we came back, everything has been sort of a absolute explosion of sort of feelings and sort of emotions and sights and sounds. And within it was, we always described it as almost like, well, the, you know, the price of bread is still, it's like, wow, is that really? And I think that's what led me down the route eventually to go, do you know what? I want to work for myself. I want to feel, even though it's tough, I want to feel like that I'm not just going through the treadmill. And that was why I, you know, that traveling allowed that to happen, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I had a very similar experience when I was traveling the first time round, but I was probably 21, 22 at the time. And I was in Australia and I was hanging around. I went to the Rainbow Temple in Western Australia near Brisbane, and I ended up staying there. I was just supposed to visit on a little tour, and I ended up staying there for like 4 months. No, 4 weeks or something like that, and hanging out with all these hippies and learning massage and yoga and energy healing. And I was like, this is what I should be doing. Yeah. But I got home and I I remember my welcome home party and I loved seeing all my friends. But I was like, wow, this is the same. It's like I haven't been away for a year.
Absolutely.
The conversations were the same. The club was the same. It's like, oh my gosh. Yeah. And I wasn't brave enough to click things in immediately. I went back to my old life. But there was that niggly feeling in the back of my head, like, come on, Jane, you know what you should be doing. And eventually, obviously, I did.
I don't know anybody that has, because I know a few people, I don't know anybody that's been traveling that hasn't come back and it has unsettled them and then made them rethink what they're going to do. I think it just naturally opens your eyes to a different way of, and as I say, I think the starkness of it, of when you come back, I think everybody has that, wow, everything's still the same. Nothing has changed. And we're all talking about the same things we were talking about previously. And I think that for people that have gone traveling for any length of time, that is pretty much a universal reaction.
Definitely. It's a beautiful experience. And I think everybody should do it.
Yeah, I agree. I would be so bold as to say, and I said this, I think that there should be a fund that every adult, once they reach adulthood, so let's say 18 to 20 or after uni, that there's a pot where they, I don't know, it might be a small amount of money, but that they should be encouraged to travel, even if it's only a short period, because it will open their eyes up to what is out there other than just their own hometown. Because the number of people I meet who've never left Bournemouth or who've never left their Dorset, and I'm like, wow, I don't understand how that's even possible. I mean, if you talk about going to London, they start panicking. And you think, really? It's not London.
So true. Yes.
I think we'd do far better to pour money into helping them go off and visit a few countries and see what's really out there than some of the other stuff they spend money on.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. So let's deep dive into your business a little bit. Okay. So your business has been going for, did you say about 10 years now?
Just over 10 years, yeah.
Just over 10 years. And obviously you've seen different economic climates throughout those 10 years. We have had a lot happen, haven't we?
Yeah,
especially in the last five alone. So what would be your best bit of business advice?
I think with business advice is don't... find your niche and stick to it. Because I think from my perspective, it's very easy to try to adapt to everything that's going on around you all the time. And the problem with that is that you become a bit of a chameleon and no one really knows what you're there for. The best businesses in the world do simple things consistently well to save people time. And that's it. And to me, that's all you've got to do. Find the person you want to work with or you want to sell to. In my case, obviously, it's who I want to work with. So I have a very, very specific type of person that I want to work with. Outside of that, then I probably don't, they're not my client. So therefore, I'm very niche, very consistent with those. So there's a philosophy about how we work together. And then you just consistently build and what you're looking to do is provide value that is around saving them time. And those are the best businesses. They will outlast everything else. Anything that comes in that's a fad. I mean, the number, especially within my industry, the number of fad things that come through, it's like a conveyor belt of fad that goes over the top. So, but underlying that, and this comes for pretty much anything to do with health and fitness, is that the basics will always work and they will always trump the fad. The fads will get a lot of airtime because they're shouted out and people will want to do them. But if you can keep your business foundationally very strong, very niche, very consistent and deliver, that's it. That's all you need to do. You don't need to make it more complicated than that.
And tell us more about your niche.
Okay. I mean, I'm principally a coach. I do run a couple of classes in the evenings, but that is a very, very tiny part of what I do. Almost primarily, I am a personal trainer. and I work with two different types of client. The first one is, well, I'll call them the urban athlete because that's my program, but they would be referred to a lot by people as weekend warriors. So I train people for events or challenges that they either are first timers or either people that have been doing for some time, but they want to improve. So I've trained people for the London, Manchester, Amsterdam marathons, ultra running, Ironmans, triathlons, cycling, swimming. I'm training somebody at the moment who's taking on the Clipper race, the round the world yacht race.
Oh, wow.
So he's got two legs of the round the world yacht race where he will be spending weeks at a time on a Clipper yacht across the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic. So, yeah. So that's my first type of client. That's the person that basically wants to be good and wants to be better at whatever they love doing outside. So it's their passion outside of their work.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of that's one client. And then the second type of client is.
And somebody... I can imagine that client is very one-to-one training. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, but I don't do any group training. I only do individual coaching.
Yes,
I will provide that coaching face to face or online, depending on the location of the client, plus also what they want themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is also a little bit of a crossover between the two clients that I generally work with.
Yeah.
So the first one is the weekend warrior. The second one is, I'd say both of these are usually 40 plus in terms of age group.
Mm-hmm.
And the second type of client is basically a very busy professional, working long hours, probably got a family, married or with a partner. Time-wise, the last person they look after is them. So they don't prioritize themselves. So they've probably, their diet is poor, they don't exercise enough, they don't move enough. And they falter. They can't seem to find the time for that. So there's usually a crossover because those people sometimes will be finding time at weekends to do some, running and whatnot. But invariably, it's trying to that second person. It's about lifestyle. It's about trying to find a way of putting a sort of a blueprint for a lifestyle, health and wellness blueprint into their life that can coexist with the demands of their lifestyle that they have at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose those are the two. One thing I will say is I don't do specifically just weight loss. It's not my client.
It's lifestyle, health and fitness, right?
Yeah. I'm looking for, basically my clients will be people that are stressed, not sleeping very well, not doing very much to look after themselves, eating on the go, eating snacks, eating like a 10-year-old, which is what I usually say to people, is if I look at their food diaries, too many of these people eat like they're 10. And what my job...
Yeah, they've finally got control of the money and they're doing everything that their 10-year-old self was probably told they weren't allowed to eat.
Exactly. So, from my perspective, it's about saying to them, okay, fine, you're looking after everybody else. You're probably successful in your career. You're probably a good mum or dad. You're probably a good husband or wife or whatever. Outside of that, you personally don't feel that you look good in the mirror. You're not happy. We're not looking to get people into, the best shape of their lives because that's unrealistic for those people. Getting in good shape and feeling good about yourself to allow you to continue to live the life you're doing is what's important there. So it's not about weight loss. It's about managing their life to make them incorporate enough of it so they can continue to do it for the decades after. Because when you get to 40 plus and 50 plus and 60 plus, it gets harder. And if you haven't built that base, there's a problem. So I suppose those are my two. But as I said, I work with people either face to face, so people can come and I only work exclusively outdoors. Again, my clients are doing events outdoors. If you can't train outdoors, then you've no business being outdoors doing an event. So I train. So like this morning, I've spent 3 hours this morning, 7, 8, and 9, with three different clients training for events. And then the rest of the day, I will now be dealing with online clients that basically probably will be either one of those two types of clients. But because of location and perhaps geography, it's better to work online. Plus, with an online system, there is more that you can do with an online client than you can with a face-to-face. Online has way more you can bring into it with regards to nutrition and sleep and mindset and education.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. And how often, how long a container do you normally have with? Is there an average or does it just depend? And maybe like me, you have clients with you that stay with you for years because they keep wanting to maintain or introduce different things into their lives.
Yeah, I think for some clients, for sure, there will be. I mean, I've got clients who have been with me for 5+ years. Because they are constantly doing challenges. So therefore there is a need for me to keep training them to continue because the challenges will change or they might have different goals. And some people just like having somebody to make sure they do everything they're supposed to do. Invariably, when people come to me and tell me what they want to achieve, I'll tell them how long that will take. The minimum is 3 months.
Yeah.
However, almost without exception, it's at least 6 months to a year for most people. 3 months is enough to get you. If you're a high performer and a driven person, and that's my type of client, a high performer with drive, but just doesn't look after themselves, then you're talking 3 months will give you a really good insight because you will put heart and soul into it. But it's not enough to create the lifestyle. It's enough to get you going, but without following on from that and building on that, you won't be. So I would say that, and it's a big bugbear I have with my industry, is that they promise results in 28 days, 21, 6 weeks to this.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. It's a marketing ploy, and I get why it's done, because you want to get people in and then move them on to the next level. But it's also feeding into this instant gratification society where people think, I've spent even if it's a year getting in this poor shape, I should be able to get out of it in 6 weeks. It's like, well, how is that even logical? So I don't buy into that. And that does mean that a lot of people won't see me as a good fit because they think, well, I want to get fit for this wedding coming up. Or I don't do that because I want this to be a lifestyle thing. That,
yes.
And in fact, my last client today, actually, we were talking about this because she's a running coach, and she said the thing that she sees a lot is that people don't see it as a lifestyle change. They just see it as a short term. Let's just do it for 4 weeks and see how it goes. And it's like, that's not how you're going to get, that's not how in 10, 20, 30 years time, you're going to be healthy and fit and well. You're just going to yo-yo backwards and forwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I totally agree with you there. It's like, well, with anything really, whether it's health, fitness, mindset, and even people's businesses, it's, if you keep it simple, you've got to be consistent. You've got to stick to the guidelines that you've agreed with, someone or you've set up yourself. It doesn't happen instantly, but if you keep that going, you do get the snowball effect.
Yeah.
And, we want longevity in our health and in our businesses. We're living longer. I've got had 3 grandparents that lived, one over 100 and 2 very close. Mm. So I'm always like, I'm going to be well over 100.
But the thing is that when you, there's a guy called Dr. Peter Attia who has written a book, does a lot of podcasts, and he's talking about longevity, but in that sense that there's no point living longer if all you're living longer is with ill health.
Oh God. Yeah. And that's the worst.
Yeah, exactly. Why? If you want to, just because you reach a ripe old age, if you for the last 20 years can't get out of a chair, what's the point? And the whole idea is if you want to live longer, you want to live longer in good health. And I think that's what people, the trick they miss. They think that it's something that they're just going to be able to move and get up and down and sort of do everything that they've been able to do. And then they're going to be, when they get to 70, they're going to suddenly realize that they don't have that anymore. And because they weren't doing anything about it. So I think that's the thing. I think it's too many people rely on motivation, which personally doesn't really work. It's very short term. What you need is discipline. And I think I always remember there's a quote which said basically it's about discipline. It's saying the people that are successful and the people that have good health and fitness are, they get up in the morning, they don't want to do what they've got planned to do, but they still do it. The people that don't get up and have the same thought but just don't do it, they're the ones that are struggling. Because so it's about having discipline. It's not about you. No one's motivated to go to the gym every day. No, yeah. I'm not motivated to do it. But it's not about motivation. It's about saying, I don't need to be motivated. I just need to know I've got to do it. And therefore, it's a non-negotiable.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Okay, so let's have a look at your client journey. So if we were to look for you for a start, where is you and your business? Is it Facebook? Is it other places? And then how do I get to work with you? What's that journey look like?
Okay. Yeah, sure. Good question. I think principally Facebook. I work on three platforms. Facebook is the largest. Instagram is just a sort of a mirror of Facebook, really. And then LinkedIn, I've started to operate on LinkedIn because, again, a lot of people on there are sort of within my demographic. Yes. But Facebook principally. So I'm on there personally. So my personal page is a brand page. It's not. I don't use Facebook personally. So there's nothing in there about sort of like family and friends and all this sort of stuff. It's purely for business. I also have two private Facebook groups. One that covers my fitness business, which is 2353 Fitness. So 2353 Fitness. That basically covers my classes. That's all it covers. And as I say, there's only two of those. And then I have a private Facebook group for my coaching clients. So you'd find me on those platforms. With regards to a client, in fact, it happened, I had a client call last night. So I explained, basically, this lady's been watching me for some time online, been looking at my content, seeing what's going on, seeing the results I get.
And clearly she's seen you're consistent in your message. So you haven't confused her. So she has picked up the phone then. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So she can see what I've got that she fits my demographic. So, and in essence, during our call yesterday, she will say certain words and it's like, yep, that's my client. Yep, that's my client. And I will know at the end of that. But what will happen is someone will approach me, however they do. Usually it's by message, so Messenger or WhatsApp, and they'll say they're interested. So at that point, we will probably have a discussion over Messenger and WhatsApp so that I can gauge whether or not what it is they're actually looking for. Because what I want to do is I want to make sure, one, that that's me, that I can deliver what they're looking for, and two, that they're clear enough on what they're looking to achieve. Because from my perspective, I just want to get a client that's going to basically do what they're supposed to do and follow the plan, and let's move forward on it.
Yes.
But once we get to that point, once we've had that sort of a little bit of back and forth of, well, tell me a little bit about yourself, what is it you're looking to do, if I feel that we can work together, and at that point they do too, then we put together a call. Now that call will invariably be over Zoom, so that we can meet face to face, similar to this. And then we will go through we will put together a plan as to find out what it is, where they are now, where they want to be, and what the gap is. And then I then have to explain to them how then we achieve taking them from where they are to where they want to go, and whether that gap is achievable and in what time scale. So we'll go through what their plan looks like, what sort of education and knowledge they're going to get out of the program, what sort of support they can expect, the accountability side of it. So again, at that point, they understand the journey is going to be all about accountability. I can't eat the food or do the workouts for them, so I have to hold them accountable for that. And then obviously it's sort of sense of community. So I think we have that call, and at the end of the call, if both parties feel that we could work well together, then we then go down the process of setting up the program. So the lady last night said, yep, I'm in. So then we have the next step. And the next step is then to set up an onboarding process where they come into, if it's online, they come onto it online, it all goes, they basically have access to my app and the app allows them to then follow the program, the structure, and all of that. So that's how someone would get on board. If it's face to face, then we go through exactly the same process. But then obviously after that, the onboarding is purely a case of, well, when do you want to meet? And this is where we'll meet. So basically everybody meets me in the same place. I don't travel to anybody because it allows me to see more clients if they're back to back. And I train on the seafront for face to face. So on that basis, you're always overlooking the sea. But yeah, that's sort of how, if someone wanted to work with me, that's the sort of where we would go. And at the end of the call that I was talking about, which is like, because I say I have two programs, the Urban Athlete and then the Fit Body Blueprint. At the end of that call, if they don't want to work with me, they will have got out of that at least an idea of what to do for the next 90 days, because I'm going to tell them that's what we're going to do for the next 90 days.
Yeah.
So they could just take that and go, okay, well, I can try that myself. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for most people, that's where the problem comes, when you've got
doesn't to doesn't quite work, them. Does it? Because we've got all of the kind of, we've got all the intentions, but it is very tricky to keep yourself accountable and support yourself and motivate yourself and everything else yourself.
And I think that the big thing, that there's an overriding word I would put in at this stage for anybody that's listening to say, how do I change, or how do I do, you know, I need to do this. I, you know, whether you're talking to me or any other coach, is environment. If you don't change your environment, nothing's going to change. If you try to change yourself within an environment that doesn't change, it is almost 100% guaranteed you will fail. And what I mean is that if you look at somebody that's, for argument's sake, nutrition, if you say that your late night snacking is a problem, and I say to you, okay, fine, then let's get rid of all the snacks in the kitchen. And you say, well, I can't do that because of X, Y, Z. Then I'll say, then you've still got the same environment, but you're expecting to do a different behavior. That's a problem. So, and that word environment basically covers every aspect, whether it's exercise, mindset, recovery, sleep, all to do with your environment. And if you can't change your environment in small ways, you're going to really struggle to change, because you cannot do it in isolation.
100%. We've just been told that I've did this. I don't know if you've heard about these machines, these bioenergetic machines, you can either put like hair samples in and then it runs this whole report on you, your, you know, what kind of areas you might need to detox. I mean, it does emotional, everything. So I did this recently with my daughter, and for both of us, it's come up as wheat and dairy. I mean, that's fairly standard for pretty much anybody and everybody nowadays. You know, they're just not good for us. So I've only just got it, but I'm like, right, just what you said, got to change the environment. Right, so what have I got in the house that I need to get rid of, and what do I need to change, like what can I put in its place?
Yeah,
I'm really thinking, like, okay, I've done this before, I don't know why I slipped down this rabbit hole again. But it is about having the right things, isn't it? It's about that environmental change.
It is.
If it's in the cupboard, it's just going to be easy to get out and have that as part of the meal.
Exactly. And I think, I mean, I had a client, another client, female client recently, where she basically went through her entire kitchen one Sunday and basically black bagged and black binned anything that would be deemed as a problem food for her. And you think, that's environment. If she kept them there, she knew that with the best will and the best motivation in the world, she and willpower, which again, similar to motivation, she would have lasted a couple of days. Now it's not perfect, but there is absolutely no way that you can be, if you're a chocoholic and you're surrounded by chocolate because, you know, the kids eat it or your husband eats it or your wife eats it or whatever it is, and you don't change the environment, you're still surrounded by chocolate. It's like being in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, expecting that you work there and expecting not to like chocolate or to eat chocolate. I think this environmental change is not played enough to people. In other words, it's all about, oh, you need to be more disciplined, you need to be, and you do, but you have to make it easier to be disciplined. If you make it hard to be disciplined, it's not discipline anymore. It's just you set a barrier so high, it's just not possible to do. So you've got to make discipline easy and not make it more difficult for yourself by saying, well, I can't change that because X. Well, then you're probably not going to change.
Setting yourself up for a little bit of a fall.
Yeah.
Any other top tips for our audience whilst we're on this?
I think for most people is don't try to do too much too soon. I think people will, whether it's people saying that they're all or nothing, which is just an excuse not to do, is an excuse to fail sort of thing to me.
Yeah.
Basically, start small, but seek guidance from people that know what they're talking about and that have got results for people. What I find the worst thing is that the number of people that are asking for advice on Facebook and LinkedIn and well, certainly Facebook and Instagram, and they're asking for advice for people that have no experience of doing what they're doing, or it might have worked for them. And it's like, you're not really getting it. Facebook is not just asking your friends and going into a social group. It'll get you 200 different answers and none of them can be right for you. But I think if you can afford a coach in any aspect of life, let alone personal training, if you can afford a coach, and generally most people probably can if they decide that they're going to spend the money appropriately, then invest in yourself in the coach. If you can't, and you really can't, then change your environment. But change things slowly and in small areas. Don't try and do it all at once. That's my top tip, because I think most people try to change everything. It's like, right, everything's going. And it just does not
work. It's just not sustainable, is it, for long periods of time?
Yeah, exactly.
Used to be me. I would, it would be, oh, well, I can't do it this weekend. I'm going to start on Monday. Right? So it's that putting off. Well, I'll start the 1st of the month.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. And then I would try and change absolutely everything. So I'd put all this pressure on myself and then I'd beat myself up because I'd fail at some point, in the plan. But it was only when I was like, right, actually, I'm going to start one thing. And I remember it was, my daughter's in secondary school now, but it was when she went to primary school. It was jogging, fast walking there at first. That's what it started. Then she was on her little scooter and I was like, right, I'm going to jog with you. Well, honestly, she'd be racing off. I'm running after her, trying to catch her. And it was just implementing things around stuff I had to do anyway, but to kind of incorporate something alongside it. So I made it easy for myself.
And that's the thing. It's about trying to simplify things rather than make things complicated.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about walking there or sort of, is that the most simple thing anybody could do that's listening to this, if they don't walk that many steps a day, is start walking more often. Just get yourself out. Me and my group a couple of weeks ago, I do a monthly challenge for clients, and we did 7 days of basically hitting certain step targets, and everybody picked their own target. Now, my group in 7 days walked over 2 million steps in total.
Wow.
Now, it was small stuff in a sense, but it was the benefits from it, and also just the realization that you could if you put your mind to it. And I think that's the thing. Don't try and make it complicated, because like we said, I said earlier about fads, the most simple stuff still works, and it works for a reason. It works because it's always been done. And for most people, just being more active, even, and it doesn't have to be gym, it doesn't have to be personal training, it just means get off your bum and go for a walk.
Yeah.
You know, if you're watching telly, you can go for a walk. If you've got 15 minutes between work, if you've got a lunch hour, and again, everybody does generally, then go out for a bit of a walk. I don't care if it's raining. It's only weather. Put a coat on. I think that's the thing. It's like, But like you just said, it's finding opportunities in the day you already have to increase your movement by just keeping it simple.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Chris. Now, remind us, how can we connect with you online?
Okay, well, I'd say I'm on Facebook as Chris Dix PT. You'll find me, you'll find my Facebook group for the group classes as 2353 Fitness. So 2353, that's the numbers, and then fitness. I'm on Instagram as Chris Dix as well, and LinkedIn the same. So I only ever use my full name.
Fantastic.
So find me on there. I'm always happy to answer questions. I'm always happy to give people advice. It doesn't have to cost anything because you're just looking for a little bit of guidance. But if you wanted to take it further, if you wanted to understand what you could achieve, given some direction, guidance, and a little bit of discipline, then reach out to me. I'm more than happy to chat.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure interviewing you. And yes, look forward to keeping up online with you.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks then. Bye. Stay Sane with Jane, Season 2, Local Legends, the show that helps you to thrive, not just survive, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Tune in each week as Jane connects with local legends of Dorset, bringing you the most up-to-date health and wellness guidance, therapies, courses, retreats, and stories happening locally. Each session includes a guided meditation hosted by Jane or one of her special guests. Here's your host, Jane Scanlon. Hello. So what an amazing interview with Chris Dix. Now we're going to shift down a gear as we go into the meditation section of the show. Now let's just pop on a little bit of music. Here we go. So today, with everything we've spoken about in the podcast, we're going to tune into bringing energy and alertness to your mind. This is a guided meditation, and we're going to be energizing the mind today. So let's tune in to this topic and how your belly, chest, and head feel when you reflect on energizing the mind. Are there any emotions that you associate with this topic? And are there any positive or negative impact stories that you believe regarding energizing the mind, bringing energy and alertness to your mind? And just remember that there are many others out there feeling similarly about this topic as you. So tune in to how you might feel with increased awareness around this topic. And when you can apply increased mindfulness to help you energize the mind in your day-to-day life. So during this guided meditation practice, the mind can grow dull or sleepy. This is a short practice. You will examine a few ways to bring energy and alertness to your mind, and you can incorporate these methods into your other practices, inviting clarity into your meditation. Have you ever found that you sometimes just fall asleep in meditation? So this practice is going to help you bring energy and alertness to the mind, but also bring mindfulness to the meditation. Okay, so allow your eyes to close and find a comfortable meditation posture. Begin by tuning into the experience of the body breathing. And rest with each inhale and exhale as you feel the movement in the body. To energize the mind, we will start with the breath. With the inhalation, breathe in a sense of energy and awareness. Reach the body upward, straightening the spine and opening the chest. With the exhale, let go of sleepiness and distraction. I invite you to practice for the next minute or so that breathing in, straightening the spine, lifting the chest up and open, and then on the exhale, letting go of that sleepiness and distraction. It. Keep up the good work. Really bringing all of that oxygen into the body. And if it feels good, allowing the eyes to open, continuing with that breath work, letting light in can help us stay awake and clear. Remember, meditation doesn't have to look a certain way. Continue practicing with the breath, allowing the body to rise, the spine to lengthen, the chest to open. Maybe you would like to raise your chin and allow your arms to reach out and open. And notice any sights that grab your attention. This is about being energized and alert. Whilst being mindful and calm. So we've allowed a couple of minutes to pass. I invite you, if you're able to stand up with your eyes open, standing on your feet, allowing the toes to spread so you are fully grounded. Your feet are slightly apart, hip width, and your hips are truly not that big. So just be mindful about what you believe hip width to be. And with this position, the chest open, the palms facing forwards, the fingers stretched out wide, 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 and the chin and head raised high. Breathe. Energizing, bringing alertness into the body. And with this stance, you are inviting increased alertness and power into your practice. I bet you don't feel sleepy now. Visualize that energy, that oxygen, that power flowing in through your mouth, through your nostrils, filling up your lungs, and then exhaling anything that no longer serves you. And as we complete this cycle, this practice, I invite you to take a moment to start shaking out your body. So we're bringing some movement into the body. We are tapping and shaking the body. We're waking up the lymphatic system with the tapping and patting. Waking up the nervous system again with the shaking, and that shaking also releases trauma and tension. Connecting the vagus nerve and allowing that sense of peace and calm to come through the body. When you're ready, bring stillness to the body again and just feel the warmth and the energy, and maybe a zingy feeling within the muscles, on the skin. And tune in to this energy and this feeling throughout the day. You can literally take a few minutes throughout your day to tune in to this practice of bringing energy and alertness to the brain, to the body, and it is a form of meditation. My name is Scanlon, and it's been an absolute pleasure to take you through this mindful meditation. And I look forward to speaking and seeing you soon. Remember, you can get these meditations sent to you on a weekly basis. The link is below. It will come directly into your inbox every 7 days, and there will be information about the Magic Moon Crew in there too, which is an amazing subscription bag, but also a community full moon meetup dippers. So tune in, look at the links, and go search us up.